Thank you very much, Cheryl and Stephanie and Larry and Baby. hello, everyone. This is Regina. And we are here now for the Guiding Light. This is the time that I read from the Bible and I share the interpretation as it comes to me. One of the stories that we read last week was a story that, according to the NIV Study Bible, this story wasn't actually in the earliest and most reliable manuscripts of the New Testament. It was added later. But it's a story that everybody seems to know and many, many people love. The story of Jesus and the adulteress, where they're throwing rocks, or they want to throw rocks. And Jesus says that they want to stone her to death, right? And Jesus says, where is the exact words? I don't want to butcher him. Don't want to butcher Jesus if the words are right here. If any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. Right? We went over that story last week. And Sunday morning during our weekly gathering, Nancy shared another interpretation of the story, one that came to her mind, which did not come to my mind, but I think it's a beautiful, beautiful interpretation. So I thought that I would start today by sharing the interpretation that Nancy shared. So again, Jesus says, if any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" And if I understood Nancy's interpretation right, when she hears that line, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? It causes her to look and wonder why she's still holding on to her condemnation of herself. It's like we're all standing here with a stone in our hand, ready to stone ourselves with our next self-judgment, right? And so Nancy hears that, woman, where are they, right? No one else is condemning you. So why condemn yourself? That's kind of what she hears. So drop the stone and walk away from self-condemnation. At least that's the way I understood the interpretation. So I thought that was really, really a beautiful way of listening to that sentence, and I wanted to share it with you. Also, last week we looked at a story called The Validity of Jesus' Testimony, where Jesus really talked about that the way that he knows the Father and the way that he knows his words are true is because of his direct experience of how the words come through him. And he seemed to express understanding that others listening, who aren't aware of that direct experience, you know, that they really don't know the Father and that they really don't know that his words are true. And that the only way that we can each know the Father and know that the words are true are to become like him, right? To become that empty vessel and to allow those words, to allow that wisdom to come through us. And by having that experience of the spontaneous teaching come through us, we learn through a direct experience about the spontaneity, the wisdom of the Father, and how it doesn't come from the individual person. And we also talked last week about how that's really always been the purpose of this room, both when it was ACIM Gather and now that it's the Awakening Together Sanctuary. But Dove especially has always said, we come here to increase trust. We come here so that we can come empty, open our mouths, and feel the spontaneous wisdom move through us. And that way we know the Father directly, just as Jesus knew the Father directly. We know we did not plan what we were going to say. We know it is not coming from our personality. And in fact, often we have the experience of incredible, profound wisdom coming through us that has never before crossed the mind. You know, like that thought never occurred to this person's mind, and yet here are these words and this teaching coming out of this mouth. People used to always ask me, who is your teacher? And my answer, Regina Dawn Akers. I mean, you know, when I come into, at that time it was ACIM Gather, when I come into ACIM Gather and I teach, the teaching that is coming through me is taking me to the next level of wisdom, right? It's I am my own teacher. And so Jesus seemed to be sharing all of these same types of thoughts last week, and he seemed to be encouraging everyone to find out for themselves directly. So what I'm going to do now is play a song, and then after that we'll move forward in the book of John and find out what's coming next. This song is the same artist. Lynn played, I think, three songs from this artist during our weekly gathering. This is a new artist that came to me in the last week. I'm trying to remember now how it came to me. I remember Carla. A friend named Carla sent me three of his songs, and then I shared it with all of the trustees, and many of us fell immediately in love with him. I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly, but I'll say Amitabhan. I don't know. I think Ami is a good nickname for him. I think he goes by Ami, but it's Amitabhan or something like that. Amitabhan. Amitabhan. So I'm going to play one of his songs now. It's a different one from the three that Lynn played on Sunday morning. I downloaded, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of his songs. This one is called Masters and the Mountain.
Miles roll by, day turns to night, caught like a deer in the headlights. When we stop, I make my way up the hill. Thank you.
That song is very devotional for me. When I listen to that song, I can see myself, but I can also see Jesus. You know, often when we read the Bible, Jesus talks about, you know, going away from the people, or the Bible talks about Jesus going away from the people to meditate alone on the mountain. So I can see Jesus as well when I listen to that song. And yes, Lynn is reminding me that Amma gave Ami his name. So, yeah. So we're enjoying his music this week, some of us. There's also another artist that Carrie shared with us that I'm also enjoying. I also downloaded several of his songs. His name is Lou Dottie. Let me spell that. And next week I'll play one of his songs as the opening song, assuming I remember I said that. Or maybe if I finish a little early today, if we're at a good break before the end of the hour, maybe I'll play one of his songs today. But I downloaded 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 is his songs as well, so it's a tie. I downloaded 7 of each of them. So here we go. We're starting today in the Bible at John chapter 8, verse 31. And my Bible gives little names to each little story. And it calls this one the Children of Abraham. So here we go, beginning with verse 31. To the Jews who had believed in him, Jesus said, "If you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." They answered him, "We are Abraham's descendants and have never been slaves of anyone. How can you say that we shall be set free?" Jesus replied, "I tell you the truth. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now, a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know you are Abraham's descendants, yet you are ready to kill me because you have no room for my word. I am telling you what I have seen in the Father's presence, and you do what you have heard from your father." "Abraham is our father," they answered. "If you were Abraham's children," Jesus said, "then you would do the things Abraham did. As it is, you are determined to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. Abraham did not do such things. You are doing the things your own father does." "We are not illegitimate children," they protested. "The only father we have is God himself." So that was John chapter 8, verses 31 to 41. So let's go back and look at this little conversation. It's kind of interesting, actually. It almost like takes a twist as far as I can tell. Well, maybe not, maybe not. It says to the Jews who had believed in him. I think I first looked at that as if he was saying to the Jews who believed him, but it doesn't say to the Jews who believed him. It says to the Jews who had believed him. And you all may remember a couple of weeks back, Jesus had many, many followers. And I think the number often reported in the Bible is about 70. And I think that many scholars would say that 70 was only counting the men. That was not counting the women and children. So a large group of people following Jesus from place to place. And then Jesus gave a teaching. The message of the teaching was really asking us to devour the message completely, right? But because of the symbols he used, it was misunderstood. It sounded kind of cannibalistic. He was saying, you know, eat my body and drink my blood. And they were like, oh, this is a tough teaching. Remember, and they all left him. Only the 12 remained, according to the Bible. Again, Mary Magdalene may well have been there, but the women are not mentioned. So only the 12 remained. Well, now this starts off with to the Jews who had believed him. So it appears that maybe Jesus has come across these people again in some place, and now he's talking to them, because of course they would be his friends, right? These are people that he knew. And so he's for some reason in a situation where he's talking to them again. And he says, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So he seems to be extending an invitation for them to reconsider their position of leaving him. For me, that's completely meaningless. Even though I shared that, that is completely meaningless, the way that my mind is listening. When Jesus says, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples, the way my mind hears that, it's not him speaking to some other people. It's him speaking directly to me. He's speaking directly to me. This has nothing to do with the story that happened 2,000 years ago. This is happening right now in this current moment as I'm reading. And so Jesus is saying to me right here, right now, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. I hear an invitation. I hear an invitation to be sincere. I think we're all aware of the fact that one thing that can happen on the spiritual path is that somewhere along the way, even if it doesn't start that way, somewhere along the way, spirituality can become something that we still talk about, and maybe we still hang out in spiritual groups of people, and we still go to retreats, and we still listen to spiritual music, and, you know, spirituality's come a part of our life, you know, because of that sincere interest we had in the beginning. But somewhere along the way, something happens that, that I get kicked out of Pal Talk. One moment, and I will be right back. That was funny. And right now, I'm unable to get back into Pal Talk. I will try again. No. No, it's saying to me. We'll pause for a moment in the heart. Hello?
You're on. We're hearing you.
Oh, you can hear me? I'm not even in Pal Talk. That's so bizarre.
Yeah, I'm hearing you.
Okay, well, then I will keep talking. All I have, I just keep getting Pal Talk, Messenger, connection failure, and I'm not even in Pal Talk, so that is so incredibly bizarre, but I will keep talking, and I guess if you lose me, you know, let me know, because I'm not in Pal Talk. It's bizarre. I don't know how it's working, but okay, well then.
Good, so.
Okay, I will continue. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, so now I feel, it feels kind of funny because I can't see you all at all, so I feel like I'm talking to myself. But I will continue. So, as I was saying, somewhere along the way, even though spirituality has become a big part of our life, right? It shows up everywhere. At the same time, somehow it's receded. You know, like all of our friends are spiritual. All the books we read are spiritual. Everywhere we go is spiritual. All the music we listen to is spiritual. But something in the heart got lost. That sincerity that may have been there in the beginning falls to the side, as spirituality just becomes the new norm, the new thing that I am, a spiritual person. And this happens to a lot of people. And so what I hear Jesus saying here, when he says, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Listen to that word, if you hold. If you hold to my teaching. I can feel that word in my heart. If you hold, can you feel that word in your heart? Can you see yourself holding the teaching in your heart? It's an invitation to remain sincere. With that same sincerity that we probably had when we started out. Without letting our lives just become spiritual lives, but yet something kind of lost, right? To hold to that. He says, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. So again, even if our life becomes I'm going to call it a spiritual life, but again, somehow that original sincerity is lost and somehow it falls back into the background in some way because it's not the center of our heart, the center of our attention in the same way. I mean, it's still there, but something's lost. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. If that happens, then we can't really say we are really Jesus' disciple, right? When it just becomes a spiritual life. But if we hold it in our heart, and again, close your eyes and feel that. Feel yourself holding the teaching in your heart. If we hold it in our heart, then we are really his disciples. You can feel the meaning of that invitation, or at least I can. And he says, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. It's a very, very beautiful invitation. But now I'm going to open my eyes and return to the story. And in the story, he is talking to another group of people. Oh my God, he's not just talking to me. Even though I feel like I'm sitting here just talking to me. I can't see you. But Jesus is not just talking to me. There's a story going on here. And in this story, he's talking to some people who at one time followed him and now don't. There's a resistance that they listened to within themselves. And so they kind of start arguing with him, right? They say, we are Abraham's descendants, and we've never been slaves of anyone. How can you say that we shall be set free? So they weren't listening to the message in the way that we were. They weren't hearing the beautiful invitation of holding the teaching in the heart. They just focused on the words, and what they heard is he's calling them slaves, and they're like, we're not slaves, right? Of course, they misheard him before, and this is why they left. But Jesus responds to them. I tell you the truth, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now, we all know that the word sin means mistake, right? It doesn't really have guilt attached to it. We've made up this idea that if we make a mistake, we're guilty, but that's an idea we've made up. We make mistakes. Obviously, when we listen to the ego thought system in the mind, that ego thought system that tells me that I am Regina and I have these political opinions and I have these preferences and these things I don't like and these people I do like and these things I don't want to do and these places I do want to go and, you know, all of that. When I listen to that entire Regina thought system, right, which is the same as the ego thought system. When I listen to that Regina thought system and I believe it is me, I am making a mistake. That's the sin. Again, there's no guilt associated with it. But when I am making that mistake, I am a slave to that mistake. When I am listening to the Regina thought system and believing it is me, I am a slave to it. In fact, if the mind, if the Regina thought system, I'm not going to change my language right now. If the Regina thought system says, oh my God, I don't want to do that. then I feel that deflated feeling of, oh, God, I don't want to do this, right? I feel that emotionally. You see, I'm a slave to it. The thought system says, I don't want to do it. I feel I don't want to do it. The thought system, you know, when the eyes open in the morning, if the thought system says, oh, God, another day, I got to do this and this and this and this, you know, I just want to stay in bed. If the thought system says that, and I make the mistake of believing that it's me, then I feel that as I get out of bed. It's another day of drudgery, right? So when we believe the Regina thought system, and I can't see who all's in the room, so I'll just go by some of the people that I remember who were there a while ago, or if Cheryl believes the Cheryl thought system, or Stephanie believes the Stephanie thought system, or Larry believes the Larry thought system, or Carrie believes the Carrie thought system, or Lynn believes the Lynn thought system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When we believe that thought system, which really is the ego, we're slaves to it. And so that's what Jesus is saying. In fact, he starts with, I tell you the truth. I tell you the truth. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Everyone who makes the mistake of believing they are the personal thought system is a slave to the personal thought system. He says, now a slave has no permanent place in the family. So what does that mean? Does that mean, oh my God, because I made the mistake of believing I'm Regina, I'm going to be cut off from God? No, of course not. No. We can't do anything to be cut off from God. What this means is Regina is a temporary manifestation, both body and personality, or we could even say body-mind personality. It's a temporary manifestation. It had a beginning, and at some point it will have an end. Regina is not a permanent part of the family. What I really am, which of course is the same as what you all really are, that awareness, isness, that life intelligence, that's a permanent part of the family. But the Regina is not. And so he is simply stating that fact. Now a slave has no permanent place in the family. Oops, Carrie is calling me now. Maybe I'm not being heard anymore. I'll take it and see. Hello, Carrie.
Hi, Regina.
Hi.
We are not hearing you anymore.
Okay, that has ended. Let me see if I can get back into Pal Talk then.
Okay, great. I'm just playing a song right now.
Okay.
I'm playing Lou Doty's Small Voice right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I had said I wanted to play one of those songs, so it's funny.
Okay, well, that's what I figured. I heard that, so I did it.
Okay, it looks
I'll
like...
I'll hang up so you can get back in.
Yeah, it looks
or do
like...
you want me to stay on?
No, it looks like I'm going to be able to get back in now. That's probably why they cut. But when I get back in, finish the song before you turn the mic over to me, okay?
Oh, okay.
All right. Bye. Hello?
I just heard that whole conversation with you and Carrie and her playing Lou Doty, but I don't see that.
You mean so you could hear me in the room?
Yeah.
That's so bizarre, but she can't. Well,
yeah.
I'm coming back in the room now. Let's see what happens. This is really a bizarre day.
All right, sweetie, I love you.
Okay, love you too. Bye.
Bye.
Listening to Lou Doty. There's Regina back. All right. So I don't know where Carrie is. I guess we're going to have to go search her out and see if we can find her. And we're just talking. We're in parallel universes here. Carrie's not in here playing a song. And so we're wondering where she is. But anyway, I'm giving you the mic back, Regina. And hopefully this will work all the way through prayer circle. Oh,
here you
gone.
All right, that's funny, Lynn. We're in parallel universes. So Carrie thinks she's in the room playing Lou Doty, and she's not. But I'm back, and I'm assuming you guys can hear me now. Is that true? Yeah, okay, great. Let me get still for just a moment and kind of recall where I was. Oh, yeah, I remember. All right, so we were talking about, of course, if I believe the Regina thought system, I'm a slave to the Regina thought system, right? And I will feel what the Regina thought system dictates. And not only that this Regina thing is temporary. This Regina thing does have an end. You know, some people don't like to hear that. Some people want to hear that these personalities, Cheryl, Regina, Hazel, Sharon, Larry, etc., Lisa, you know, Tana, right? That these personalities are somehow going to become immortal, or that they are immortal, and we just don't realize that we're going to become aware of it. The truth is, the personality is going to end. It is a temporary thing. It does not have a permanent place in the family. What continues is what we really are, which Jesus refers to as the Son. He says, now a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So what he's asking us to do really is to learn that we are not that Regina thought system or Cheryl thought system or Lynn thought system, etc., etc., that is not what we are. And of course, as he's already said, to hold to his teachings in a very sincere way and to seek out that which we are, which we truly are. And when we realize that as our identity, then we no longer perceive ourselves as a temporary entity. We know ourselves as that which is eternal. And of course, we are set free. There can be no more fear, right? There can be no more fear. There's peace, there's joy, there's celebration. And so we're set free. So as long as we believe I am this personal thought system, right? As long as we believe that, we are slaves. But if we hold to the teaching, we seek out our truth, we realize ourselves as what he's calling the Son, that which is beyond the personal thought system, then we are free. Even when the person dies, we continue to exist because we're no longer tied to the person as who I am. So I tell you the truth, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. If the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. Well, how does the Son set you free? By coming to realize you are the Son. Oh, Larry says he hears Carrie's music. We are in alternate universes. Some people in the sanctuary seem to be having one experience, and some people in the sanctuary seem to be having another experience. That's bizarre. So I guess we'll each trust that we're having the experience that we're supposed to have today. How does that sound? Yeah. So if the Son sets you free, if you come to realize who you really are, you will be free indeed. And then Jesus says, I know you are Abraham's descendants, right? He's like, I, you know, realize who you think you are is really what he's saying. I realize who you think you are. Yet you are ready to kill me because you have no room for my word. He's also aware of their resistance. I am telling you what I have seen in the Father's presence, and you do what you have heard from your father. So he's saying, I am speaking from my experience of knowing the Father, of knowing the truth. And you are speaking from your experience of the personal thought system. In fact, when you have this resistance to me, this resistance that is so strong you want to kill me, what's really happening is that you're listening to the personal thought system. In this very moment, you are a slave. In this very moment, you know, the personal thought system is saying, you know, make this guy shut up. And you're feeling all of that resistance and all of that anger and you're ready to kill me. Right this moment, you're a slave, he's saying. Right this moment, what I'm teaching is happening to you. Look, again, he's not accusing. Often if you read the Bible too quickly and without the heart, it sounds like Jesus steps into accusing, you know, like almost like he's saying, you listen to your father, you know, in an accusing way. But he's not saying that. He's saying, look, what I'm explaining to you is happening right now. Look and you can notice. And in fact, somebody could. Maybe the majority of the people did not, but somebody could. Somebody who had enough willingness could look and see, oh my God, it's true. My thoughts are telling me, hate him, hate him. And my body is feeling hate. Oh my God, it's true. I'm a slave to my thoughts. You know, I mean, so he's pointing it out to them. And maybe somebody saw, oh my God, it's true. So he's not accusing them. He's taking them, those who want to follow, into a direct experience. Because you know what? It really isn't helpful to believe a teaching. When we believe a teaching, it's mental only. It's much more helpful to have a direct experience of a teaching. It's much, much more helpful to see for yourself that you are a slave to the personal thought system. That when the thought system says, I hate her, you feel hate. And the thought system says, oh my God, I'm such a pig. You have that big unworthiness feeling, right? That you're a slave. It's helpful to see that for yourself. So he's pointing it out and offering them that opportunity. But even if maybe someone did look and did notice, the general crowd is not, because they continue with their argument. Abraham is our father, right? They're not looking and noticing the personal thought system. They're not looking and noticing that they're a slave to it, that it's like their father because they feel and do whatever it asks them to feel and do. They're not noticing. And so again, they're still at the mental level. And in this culture, you know, they're raised as Jews and they're taught that Abraham is their father and they're the chosen ones. And they're just going with their conditioning, right? They're not doing any looking at all. And so they just yell right back at him, Abraham is our father. But then Jesus says, if you were Abraham's children, then you would do the things Abraham did. I don't know if you all know the story of Abraham, but it's an amazing, amazing story. You see, the Jews, as we know them, did not really exist until after Abraham. That's why they say that he's the father of the Jews, right? He was the first Jew, the first Israelite. Before that, I mean, the people existed, but they were not yet Israelites. They were tribal people, and they believed in many gods, just like most people did during that time in the universe's history. And they would buy these images, and they would have a kitchen god that they would put in the kitchen, and maybe a romance god, a fertility god that they would put in the bedroom, and maybe another god outside so that the crops would grow, you know. And they believed in all of these gods, and they prayed to all of these gods, you know, just like I said, like so many other people at that time in history. And this was their conditioning. This is what they knew. Nobody ever, ever, ever had a thought of one God. That idea died with Noah, right? So, and Abraham starts hearing a voice. a voice that tells him that he is the one God. Not that Abraham is, but that the voice is. The voice says, I am, you know, he's the one God. And he asks Abraham to leave the place where he lives, the only place that he knows, and to go to a promised land. And he leads Abraham and his family, his people, for years and years and years. And you know, nobody can even, you know, where the heck is this promised land? What's this voice you're listening to? And Abraham continues to have faith and he continues to trust. All the way up to what is known as the final test, because Abraham became very attached to his son Isaac. And then this voice asked him to sacrifice his son Isaac for God. And Abraham listens to even that. And he takes Isaac and he puts him on the altar and he raises the knife up and he's just about to sacrifice him when the voice tells him to stop and a ram is provided and he sacrifices the ram instead. I can't remember where I read it, but somewhere in the Bible, maybe we'll even come to it in John, I don't know. Somewhere in the Bible I read a sentence. And that sentence said to me something that had never occurred to me before. That Abraham followed that voice so far that he actually awoke to the true self. It had never occurred to me before that Abraham had awakened, but there was a sentence somewhere in my contemplation and I saw it and I went, oh my goodness, he followed the voice all the way. So think about what Abraham did. He went against everything he knew, all of his conditioning, all of his culture, because a voice arose in him and said that it was the one God, which he didn't even know there was the one God, right? And he trusted this voice and he followed it, even though it did not immediately lead him to what it promised, a promised land. It did not take him directly there. There was many, many, many years passed, right? Jesus is saying, if you were Abraham's children, then you would do the things Abraham did. He's using their idol, Abraham, as an example to say, Abraham abandoned his conditioning. Abraham abandoned everything he thought was true. Abraham followed a truth he could not understand. He's saying, then imitate Abraham then. Don't cling to your conditioning, cling to your culture, cling to your thought system. Abraham let it all go. Be like him then. This is what Jesus is saying. Do what he did. Right? If you were Abraham's children, then you would do the things Abraham did. But then he says, as it is, you are determined to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. Again, he's pointing out, you're listening to the personal thought system. You're listening to your conditioning. You're listening to your culture. You are not being like your father Abraham. In fact, he goes on to say, Abraham did not do such things. You are doing the things your own father does. Again, he's not accusing, he's pointing out. He's giving them the opportunity to notice. If you were Abraham's children, then you would do the things Abraham did. As it is, you are determined to kill me. You're still listening to your personal thought system. You are determined to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. Abraham did not do such things. He did not listen to his personal conditioning. You are doing the things your own father does. You're a slave to your mind. This is the conversation. Now, the next little story in the Bible, which is a continuation of this, really, but I get a new title here in my Bible. It's called The Children of the Devil. The Children of the Devil. So starting at verse 42, Jesus said to them, "If God were your Father, you would love me, for I came from God and now am here. I have not come on my own, but he sent me. Why is my language not clear to you? Because you are unable to hear what I say. You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desire. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Yet because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Can any of you prove me guilty of sin? If I am telling the truth, why don't you believe me? He who belongs to God hears what God says. The reason you do not hear is that you do not belong to God." And again, heard with the wrong mind. Sounds like he might be accusing them of something, you know, attacking them. But he's not. This is just more of the same conversation. The devil here, it's just a word that's been misrepresented, but it refers to the ego. It refers to the personal self, right? The story of the devil is that the devil was an angel, but then the devil decided that he wanted the power of God for himself, right? He wanted to be God, and so he some way challenged God. I don't remember the story perfectly from the Bible. The most recent version I read was in the Quran, so that's standing in my mind. But he somehow challenged God, and God cast him out of heaven. Right? That's the story. Well, think about that. That's really the ego. I mean, first of all, you have to realize that God is simply isness, life, awareness. Right? There's not a person God of any type, not a divine person. The ego rises up. The ego is the first thought of person, the first thought of me, the first thought of I. And the ego wants this to be true, this me. And in that way, it casts itself out of heaven, which is out of the realization of what we really are. So the ego and the devil are synonymous. Now the idea of... Oh, I'm getting kicked out again. Don't know if you can hear me. But on the chance that you can, I will keep talking. Because it looks just like it did before. The idea of sin and guilt is not true. In fact, ultimately, the ego is not true, but we believe it. So to just say it's not true is a little bit silly. But the idea that there is a personal thought system that thinks it is something distinct and individual, and that we listen to it as if it's true and that we become it, that's something that we don't want to ignore. We want to look at this and we want to see that we are, pardon the expression, the children of this ego. And by children of this ego, I mean we believe it. We listen to it. If it says, "I hate hot days," then on hot days we're complaining, right? Just like Jesus is trying to point this out to those people, we need to be willing to look within ourselves and say, "Oh my God, it's true. It's true. This ego is my father." I mean, and that's not a permanent statement. That's just a right now, I believe I'm this person. Right now, I listen to this thought system and I react as it asks me to react. And he calls this thought system the devil. He calls this thought system a murderer. Well, it's not really a murderer. Not really. That's a symbol. And the way that you know it's not really a murder is that right now you are. Right? Right now you are ising. You are aware. You may be completely confused about who you are and what is true, but you still are. And that are, A-R-E, that ising, that awareness is God. So your true self has not been murdered. But the reason Jesus calls the devil, the ego, the personal thought system, a murderer is because it has the ability to distract us so much that we don't even notice the awareness that we are. We never think about it. We never give it the time of day. We never look at it. We don't notice the isness that we are. I mean, sure, we're alive, but we never sit and contemplate life itself. We never sit and just be and love being for being. We don't pay any attention to our truth. We're completely caught up in the untruth, the personal thought system, the ego, the devil. In our culture, we've become so afraid of the word devil, I think it's probably helpful for me to just repeat it many, many times until that word becomes very benign and simply means personal thought system. So we listen to the devil, the personal thought system, so much that we are fully distracted from our true self. And this is why Jesus is calling the devil a murderer. It's a symbol. He also calls it a liar. And it does lie. Right? It lies to us about everything. If it tells me that I hate the heat or that I hate the cold, that's a lie. That's not at all true about who I am. There is nothing in awareness that hates anything, otherwise heat or cold. Awareness just is. Awareness is just being. It's just present. So it's telling me that I have all of these preferences, all of these things that I want, all of this grasping, all of these things that I don't want, all of this avoiding, manipulating, control, judging, and it tells me that I am all of that. That's a lie. So Jesus says the devil is the liar and the father of lies. And then Jesus says, yet because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Interesting words. Yet because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. What does that mean? Because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. It means that we believe the thought system so much that anything that is different from, counter to the personal thought system, we don't believe. If I believe I am a person, and then a truth teacher says you are not a person, I think, ah, he's crazy. I'm a person, right? If I believe that I'm going to die, and then a person who's teaching the truth says what you are is eternal, I may say, yeah, well, that sounds good. I would like that, but it's not true, right? Because if I believe my mind fully, if I believe the personal thought system fully, then when I hear words of truth, they sound like lies. Because they're the opposite of what I believe to be true. So Jesus is telling us, you have listened to this father of lies so much, you've become hypnotized by its lies, that when I speak truth, you think I'm lying. You're so confused. Yet because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. And then he says, can any of you prove me guilty of sin? He says, remember, sin means mistake. Can any of you prove that I'm wrong? Do you know this for a fact? Or do you just think I'm wrong because you're so caught up in the personal thought system? In other words, he's saying, are you 100% sure that you're right? And this is a wonderful, wonderful question, because if anybody can say, wait a second, I'm not 100% sure I'm right, boom, we have willingness. Even if we can take them down to 99%, I think I'm 99% right. That 1% is the crack that we call willingness. And I don't know if you can hear me or not. I just popped back into Pal Talk. But what I'm seeing is an empty room with no names, no mic, nothing. And I'm hearing little Pal Talk bells. So let me just go ahead and conclude, even though I'm not certain if you can hear me. We're so close to the end. Let me finish. Can any of you prove me guilty of sin? Or can any of you prove that I'm wrong? This is opening up healthy doubt. This is allowing them to question what they've always believed. He says, if I am telling the truth, why don't you believe me? Now that he's opened up the healthy truth, I mean the healthy doubt, he's opened up the healthy doubt, can you prove that I'm wrong? And now he's saying, why don't you listen? Why don't you trust me? Why don't you check? Why don't you look? Why don't you try? What if I'm right? Do you really want to miss this opportunity? Can any of you prove me guilty of sin? If I am telling the truth, why don't you believe me? Why not come and give it a try? He who belongs to God hears what God says. Now he's saying, this is your truth. You really believe, you really belong to God. He's your true Father. And if you give this a try, you will find out within your own direct experience that everything I'm saying is true. You don't have to really believe me. You just have to trust me enough to do the looking yourself. And then you will find out the truth directly. He who belongs to God hears what God says. And then he says, the reason you do not hear is that you do not belong to God. And again, not meant to be accusing, but just, if you do not hear me right now, it's because you're listening to the personal thought system.